Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to part two of Stalking Time for the Moon Boys.
I have a trouble is because when we're in the shed, we can show things and I you know, but it's very much sort of Bowie origin story type thing.
Like Stardust,
but better, because there's a Bee Gees documentary, isn't there, on Amazon or something?
Which, there is. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, so it's pretty good and it's got, you know, reminds you that they wrote some, I don't know, it reminds you that they wrote some really good songs. It also, a bit to me, this is not what I want to say, but a bit like the Beach Boys, I think it's possible to write amazing songs and sing them in a slightly annoying way. And I can't listen to too much Beach Boys because in the end, I find listening to high voices is just sort of slightly grates. So I find that about...
Yeah, I really got into Beach Boys briefly, but I think you're right. I think that there's an element of the Beach Boys where you just think, wait a minute, it's a sort of blink and you see what it feels like. Or like, you know, William Burroughs said, the naked lunch.
Right.
You call that because you realise suddenly sometimes what it is on the end of your fork. It's a piece of dead flesh. That's a sort of bad epiphany. And I sometimes think with the Beach Boys, you're listening, you think, oh, yeah, this is nice. And then you think, wait a minute, I'm listening to a barbershop quartet.
Yes.
And that's quite a bad moment.
I think Pet Sounds, which is obviously always at the top of every chart about great albums made by white people ever, when I listen to it, it is kind of amazing. It's extraordinary and incredibly nuanced and layered and, you know, whatever. But then it also is, and they're like, fuck it, it's really annoying to listen to.
Yes, I'm less worried about that. Some of the sort of mad symphonics that Brian Wilson like, than I am, as you say, the way they sing, sometimes I just think, no, but that I'm hearing a bit of the Swingle Singers here.
Yeah.
And that I always find that a bit problematic. Who was the other one we were talking about before?
Well, that the Bee Gees is arguably...
Yeah, although the Bee Gees, I slightly disagree with that, because although when I was 17 and hated disco like an idiot, I thought they were rubbish. I now do think that in their golden period, they wrote some incredible songs. How Deep Is Your Love is like just an incredible song. And I think it really suits that falsetto stuff. It really
Even before watching the Bee Gees doc, I would think How Deep Is Your Love is one of the most beautiful, brilliant. Yeah, it's an absolute. And I could listen to that like now and would love hearing it. It's incredible. But I don't think I would listen to a whole album very easily of Bee Gees things. And I think that is because I find the singing a bit annoying. And that.
Are you aware of Meaningless Songs in Very High Voices by the Heebie Jeep? So friends of mine and people that you know, Angus Deaton.
Yeah, yeah.
And Michael Fenton Stevens and Philip Pope formed a band called the Heebie-Jeebies, who were like the Barren Knights. The Barren Knights, for anyone listening still with us, were a sort of band that used to do impressions of other bands in the 1970s and had a lot of hits doing that. But they used to do quite a lot of other bands. The Heebie-Jeebies just did the Bee Gees, and they did a song called Meaningless Songs in Very High Voices. I might play a bit of it. Okay, so here we go. Meaningless Songs in Very High Voices. It's very good.
So I'll have to do what I did yesterday and sing you meaningless songs in very high voices with a thousand violins.
Yeah, so that's them, and it was a comedy. And I think they were like number one in Australia with that comedy parody of the Bee Gees. And I sort of bring this up purely because I think it's a weird idea that like that which was a piss take of the Bee Gees, I think was probably being bought by some people who just liked the Bee Gees and thought that sounds really like the band I like.
Yes. I mean, it slightly takes you into another, I mean, this does make me sound sort of old and everything, but that whole thing of novel, of not even, I wouldn't say it's a comedy of Barren Knights and Heebie-Jeebies, and that's definitely gone away, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? I mean, well, actual bands doing it has gone away. If you Googled Ed Sheeran, impression.
Right,
okay. You get loads of people doing comedy impressions of Ed Sheeran.
Okay, yeah. But if we're to use the Barren Knights example and try and explore why it doesn't have, you'd have a band, or I suppose an individual, who does Adele impressions or Ed Sheeran and writes a song called...
What, you mean like a comedy song?
Well, it would be, it'd be a comedy song that pastiched Ed Sheeran and made some jokes sort of about Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
And
perhaps and called the B Team.
And would be on Radio 1.
Yeah, it would be on Radio 1. They did a song, the Barren Knights, called Call Up the Groups, which was a medley. Let them call up the other groups. We think it's a great idea.
What is that?
That's the lyrics to Call Up the Groups, a medley by the Barren Knights, which I think parodied the Rolling Stones, the Searchers, the Dave Clark Five in one song. Frank Skinner used to be obsessed with this, and he used to often sing. It goes, let's just call up the other groups. We think it's a great idea. And he would sing that endlessly when we used to live together and just say, no, it isn't afterwards. Here it is. Listen to this.
What a place it was, and they knew they had to go away and get away. Next in line, we were dreaming maybe the Rolling Stones would be fit for the Navy. We don't want to join the Royal Navy, we don't want to go to Hong Kong.
Right, so something I didn't realise about Call Up the Other Groups, let's just call up the other groups, we think it's a great idea, is by call up, they mean join the army and the navy.
Oh.
I mean, it's even more late 60s, early 70s an idea than I realised.
Yeah, because I couldn't work out what call up meant. Okay, wow.
No, that's what it means, because it's about sending the searchers to Algiers.
Right.
And then Freddie and the Dreamers, I can't remember where they went, but it was also something involved the word corporal. And then we're not going to join the Royal Navy as the Rolling Stones because we want to wear our hair long.
So they're all draft dodgers.
They're all draft dodgers, and there's an element of national service but to it, which I think is weird because, I know this was in 1964. So was national when was national service abolished?
Well, like, I don't know, it feels like end of the 50s or?
Yeah. I think because people are really laughing because it's clearly a live version of it.
Yeah.
I think it must have felt very, like, how hilarious that these crazy beat combos might be in the army, yeah, and the navy.
Yeah, yeah. For some reason it's died out as an art form. I can't think. Call up Ed Sheeran.
Let's call Ed Sheeran and send him to Afghanistan. It's not going to work, is it? And then you go to a version of the A team that's about the Afghanistan team.
Taylor Swift goes to... maybe that's the problem. No, we're right.
If it was topical, it'd be about COVID now. And it would be about all of them dealing with COVID in their different ways. And each bit of the medley would go into a different part of the song.
What they might try now, and it would go really badly, is they might do something to promote mask wearing.
Yeah.
And that's how they'd do it.
Well, almost definitely now, a number of things would go wrong. Like, number one, I'm not sure how they got the rights to use the melodies, because those are the actual melodies of those songs.
Not only that, but the Rolling Stones one is, of course, a Lennon McCartney song. That's I Want to Be Your Love. So they're ripping.
Yeah, but they did but write it for the Rolling Stones. But yes, they'd have to get the rights from Lennon and McCartney for that. But then also, almost definitely as well, they would fall foul of Twitter in some way.
Yes.
Like either of the fans of those people who would be furious, or because they, you know, the idea of sending Ed Sheeran to Afghanistan would be offensive to soldiers and people from Afghanistan.
Also, you'd probably get like at Freddie and the Dreamers saying, we actually did national service, we support Britain abroad.
Yeah.
And yeah. But sorry, the point a long time ago of the annoying high singing, which somehow led to this, is that
it led to it via the heebie jeebies who were like the Baron Knight.
Yeah, that's right. So after watching that Bee Gees documentary, in a way that I sometimes do, which is to think, I wonder how they're connected, if at all, to Bowie. Like there are some obvious people, but sometimes people like Paul McCartney, you think, I wonder, they never seem to be connected to Bowie. And then you find there's something. But so I was trying to work out what, and it turns out there is a sort of connection to Bowie, which I was quite interested in, which I didn't really appreciate or know, unless maybe you did. When Bowie wrote Space Oddity,
yeah,
basically wrote that to be a Bee Gees song, as in his mind, to be a Bee Gees song.
Did he?
And when you listen to it, and there's a version on YouTube, that very early version of it, before the sort of pop single version, it's exactly, you sort of think, of course it is. Because at that time, the Bee Gees were doing things like New York Mining Disaster, I think, and stuff. They were almost a bit Dylan-ish, and they were a bit folky.
Yeah.
And a bit sort of narrative songs. And Massachusetts, right. I probably got the dates wrong, but that sort of thing. And when you listen to Space Oddity, you think, yes, he's singing it in a very Bee Gees way, not the high voice, because that came later.
They hadn't come to that yet.
Yeah, they hadn't come to it. So they're sort of almost singing that slightly flat, almost Liverpudlian, you know, that slightly sort of, I'll tell you a story. And right. It is really, and of course right. You listen to it, you think, of course.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. Does he say that somewhere?
Yeah, yeah. No, he talks about it. He's really open about it.
Well, I don't think he needs to be ashamed of it. You said what? That as if you expected he might be ashamed of it. But I think it's okay to say he was influenced by the Bee Gees in 1969.
Yeah. And again, it took me back to that thing, which a lot of the great artists, by which I mean Paul McCartney and David Bowie, to be honest, because those are the two examples I know about, where they often say, I wrote that song because I'd heard the Ronettes do Be My Baby or something, and I wanted to do that. And you think, God, it's amazing. Something so original came from the desire to be like something else. And Space Oddity does seem to almost occupy a world all of its own. But you listen to it and think, of course, he's doing a Bee Gees song, but he's...
So just to interrupt, from a comedy point of view, this is a very old hat thing. Like people often say when they're at the foothills of comedy, how did that happen? But I'm going to say it.
Right.
Which is, it's a sort of genuine question, really, which is, it's true, the Bee Gees, for a long time, for albums, were just singing normally. What was the moment that someone said, right, hey, why don't you sing an octave higher than you ever sung before? I know it'll sound stupid, and I know it'll sound like you've just sucked in from a helium balloon, but trust me, it'll be fine. Yeah. And they were right, that person, or is that not how it happened? How did
That's a good question. It certainly doesn't cover it in the documentary, because it's obviously a bit more respectful, not respectful, but you're right. You hope that it's one of those things which is Morris did a track and then they played it back at double speed, and we thought, right, hang on a minute, that's what you want, one of those.
What accent was that?
Morris's accent.
Right. Aren't they from the Isle of Man?
I think they're from, weren't they from Liverpool?
I'm going to check the Bee Gees. How did they come to sing like that?
Yeah.
How the Bee Gees trademark falsetto sound came to be. There is a whole article about it.
Right.
And it came, you're right, accident. It's an accident. Hang on. Did you watch the documentary, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart?
That's the one, yeah.
Well, it says that it, is it, it in shows there? It.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They began experimenting with new sounds in 1975. While recording Nights on Broadway, producer Arif Mardin asked that someone harmonise while screaming in the background, and then Barry Gibb sang falsetto, and Barry thought, my God, where's this coming from? I can do this. My whole life, I never knew I could do it. And then they just, yeah, that was it.
Wow.
They decided that was the way to sing. I mean, yeah, it's amazing, actually. It's amazing still, though, that no one said, okay, that was great, Barry, that sort of screaming in the background, yeah, for that particular track. Don't, for God's sake, suggest that we should do that just as our sound from now on. No. That would be ridiculous.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I was just thinking now, imagine the entire Beatles catalogue, or Bowie, but let's take Beatles, it's more of exactly the same, all the instruments the same, but they sang it all in falsetto.
I know, it would be ridiculous.
It'd be terrible. And they wouldn't be the band.
No,
they
everyone
are,
would,
right?
Think, yeah, no one would take them seriously. But then again, at the time, the Bee Gees weren't, when they were doing that anyway, I think they were taken seriously when they were doing Massachusetts and New York Mining Disaster. They were sort of like, as you say, kind of a folk band. But at the time when they were having massive hits, when it was Staying Alive and when it was How Deep Is Your Love and all their great songs, I certainly, as a sort of young gunslinger who read the NME, didn't take them at all seriously, just thought they were silly. No. I now think that those songs are brilliant.
They are brilliant, but they would definitely be better sung in a lower register.
No, I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I think the Bee Gees version of How Deep Is Your Love is definitely the best version of it you'll ever hear. Like take that, do a cover of it, and it's not as good. It's not, and they sing it well. Okay, it's not as good. No, forget that. They take that. It's just not as good because he's not singing it in a silly way.
Yeah, but also, I would say How Deep Is Your Love is not sung in a silly way. It's a bit more I don't think it's.
Oh, yeah, it is. Hang on.
Because
I'm going to put it on now, and we're going to make a decision as to whether it's sung in a silly way. Okay. Me in the pouring rain, and the moment that you wander far from me, I want to feel you in my arms again. And you come. Okay, that is a really good question. I think that is right on the edge, philosophically, is that being sung in the Bee Gees falsetto style or not?
I don't think it is.
It's not like Tragedy.
No.
It's not like Staying Alive. Those are falsetto. But if you went back to Massachusetts, can't believe we've gone into this detail about the Bee Gees, and those kind of songs, they wouldn't have the so it's like falsetto thing that you're doing there.
Well, I would say as an opening, as a gambit, that song, How Deep Is Love, has much more in common with the Massachusetts that than it does with Tragedy. I think it's more, more.
You say that, but I've just remembered something about it. Okay, keep right. Going. Hang on.
Oh, it's got a high bit. And it's me you need to
show. How deep is your love? Is your love? That's pretty high.
No, that's high, but lots of songs have high bits. Centre of gravity is in that, I admit, slightly breathy, but it's not a falsetto, I don't think. I think it's much more like a Massachusetts than it is Tragedy, which is just all very...
Okay, all right. You know what? It's a great song. It's a slightly bad example because your argument is those songs that use the falsetto would be better without falsetto. A case in point where that's wrong, Staying Alive, right? I mean, Staying Alive... That's why it's a good song. It's the sort of absurd beat of it with that high voice, isn't it? Let's just listen to it. Yeah. I mean, what is really funny about that, even though I think it totally sounds brilliant, is you can't see it, but the video has got Maurice, Barry and...
Yeah.
What's the other one called?
Robbie.
Robin. Walking down a hard sort of industrial New York street, or like in a line, really kind of with hard sort of like, you know, we're tough guys' faces. Yeah. And the song, you know, is about, you know, I've been kicked around since I was born, women warm, and but it's really a macho song.
Yeah.
And they're singing it in the most effeminate way possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a, it's an amazing rhythm section, and it's a great sound. I just don't, it grates after a while. And I think the other thing about the Bee Gees, which this documentary bears out, although it doesn't mention Kenny Everett, is they slightly had their Bo Selector Craig David moment, which is Kenny Everett and others of the time would sort of pastiche them in a really full-on way.
And the heebie-jeebies.
Right, yeah, and the heebie-jeebies. And it sort of slightly made them silly, and it became a slightly enduring way of thinking about them, partly because of what you say, which is they're all tough and medallions, but in these sort of high voices.
No, they're obviously silly. I mean, they are silly, but, you know, this is a, not a particularly original discussion, but, I mean, ABBA was silly, and I thought they were silly at the time, but now I just think those are extraordinary songs melodically. Yeah. I think Dancing Queen is literally one of the greatest songs ever written.
Yes.
And I mean, only David Bowie, I would say. Yeah, probably only David Bowie, somehow or other in the 1970s, whilst writing great songs. Because I do think the Bee Gees were writing great songs and ABBA were writing great songs, but they were silly and they seem visually silly now and whatever. You just hear the music and you think, no, this actually is a brilliant song if you see through the silliness. Somehow or other, Bowie isn't silly. And I don't know how he manages that somehow. Everyone else is to some extent.
Yes, it's a very good point. And I think that's partly the sort of the artist Bowie that sort of people acknowledge that he was, there's a sort of seriousness about, yeah, even because his vulnerable period would indeed be, you know, 1972, you know, when he's dressed up in what people
would. But he's not silly then. I don't think he's silly.
But I'm saying that's probably when people might think, oh, look at him, is he a boy or a girl and all that stuff that people would have said about that. And made him a bit Mark Bolan and a bit the mud and sweet. And ultimately, the songs are so extraordinary, right? That's ultimately what it is, I think.
But is it, though? No, I don't completely agree with that. I think there is something else. I mean, the songs are extraordinary. We know that. But I do genuinely think great ABBA songs, great Bee Gees songs, there's not as many of them, but they are brilliant songs. But they are very silly. You know, just that video now, Staying Alive, it's hilarious. It's completely ridiculous. Yeah. You're listening to it and there's a cognitive dissonance, which is I think, what a brilliant song, what a brilliant riff, but how stupid they look, right? Well, and I think that with ABBA, and I think that when I watched the video for Knowing Me, Knowing You, which is, again, why French and Saunders could parody it, because it's hilarious, taking itself much too seriously video. But Knowing Me, Knowing You is a brilliant song. Bowie, you watch virtually anything. I mean, there are elements of Bowie later on in the 80s, which get pretty ridiculous. But in the 70s, when he's more theatrical and broader in his look and his attitude and everything, makes me laugh. Like, I never watch Starman anything from that period.
But you are right, and we've trodden this ground many times, that there is a period, quite a long period, when Bowie is silly and...
Oh, yeah. Most notably in the video with Mick Jagger for Dancing in the Streets.
Well,
oh, by the way, I can't recommend enough, by the way. I don't think it's worth really playing on this.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
You mean the video where it's just them making noises?
It's the funniest.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Whoever, I don't, they, it's actually, my son showed it to me and it's a thing. It's a thing. Yeah, I didn't know. Right. It's a genre where people take out the music and just have people making noises and
grunting
and jumping and, you know, yeah. It's so funny. And it reveals, of course, how ridiculous that video is. It just, you know, the minute that you haven't got the music, you think, these two silly men doing silly moves. But yeah, that's ridiculous. That is laughable, him in that Mac and Mick Jagger jumping about in a sort
of way. More tragically for David, which he rescued in the end, is that when he's sort of being serious and doing stuff with that goatee and that weird long coat that looks like it's bought from M&S, with Jack on the back or whatever, that's when it's sort of awful to admit, but that's when it's most ridiculous and laughable and it's horrible.
I don't know if I completely agree with that. I find those bits just a bit tragic. I don't I mean, I was literally wanting to laugh out loud as I was watching Staying Alive in a way that I feel quite good about. I feel like this is sort of hilarious and it makes me feel quite joyful in its hilarity. And I think the same thing about ABBA. When I look at Benny and Bjorn's faces, I think it's sort of hilarious that they're pop stars, like the biggest pop stars in the world at one point. But Bowie in his, trying too hard, 90s serious period is just a bit, it creates a kind of empty feeling in me.
There's also a truth, but I don't know if it covers ABBA. It definitely covers Bee Gees to an extent, that you don't get with Bowie in that golden period, which is it doesn't date, or at least it doesn't seem to be.
Well, it doesn't date. I know. That's the same thing. It's extraordinary. It doesn't date. But that's what, the reason that ABBA, or indeed Slade.
Yeah.
Again, I would say Slade's greatest songs are really brilliant songs.
Yeah. Like
fabulous songs. Oh, but obviously you look at them performing them and they are totally ridiculous.
Yeah, and so you're sort of...
And they're not that far. That's the really interesting thing. They're not that far from how David Bowie looks.
Yeah.
But
he's
not ridiculous. I'm talking about the same time period.
Yeah. No, and I think you laugh at the Bee Gees and Slade and to some extent T-Rex, although I'm...
Yes, I know. Well, Mark Bonham's on the edge.
Yeah.
I would say.
There's an affection. There's a sort of... That used to be what people did. There's something quite nice about that, isn't it? And the Bee Gees are an extreme example of that. Open shirts, looking, and sort of the medallions and all of that. And it's just, it seems silly to us now. Whereas you don't ever look at Bowie, even in the most 70s he ever looks, you know, with the big boots, you know, it still looks like, well, it is something you look at the V&A Museum. It's like, wow, it's timeless. And that's
it is something you look at the V&A Museum. I wonder if that's part, I mean, it's part because he just did have a, you know, he had a very acute sense of style. And even though the 70s was a ridiculous period for fashion, not absolutely everything was ridiculous in it. And he managed to fish out some of the stuff that wasn't, I think. Yeah. But it also partly to do with the way he carries himself. Like if you look at the Bee Gees on this video, and listeners, I can really advise you to go and see the official video of Staying Alive. Part of what's ridiculous about them is, I don't know, they're taking themselves very seriously and they can't, in their medallions and their seriousness, walk down the street in a way that seems anything but totally laughable looked at from now. Whereas Bowie had an irony or something, a seriousness and an irony about him always.
I also think what he got so right, and we've talked about this period, the whole sort of he cleaned up and went to Berlin in 77. We all know he didn't clean up anything because they were still taking drugs and all the rest of it. What he got a very quick sense of, or a very strong sense of, is that there was the Bee Gees sort of sprouting hair and chests through the late 70s. Everyone looked a bit sort of, started to look ridiculous. He got onto this notion of the slight European, the sort of new wave, the sort of bring it all in a bit. So his hair looks incredible in 1978. So, but it doesn't look like 70s hair. Mm-hmm. It looks like what? Like 1980? I mean, it's so...
It looks late 70s. I mean, for, you know, post-punk and... I mean,
but it looks, it's closer to Joy Division or, you know, there's the sort of craft works, that all that stuff that we know about. And he had a sense of that. As you say, that's part of his sense of style. There's never a bad look in that period, as you say, in a look so famous for bad looks. He never has.
Yeah, and also so close to bad looks. It's you could, you know, particularly earlier on, when he's trying to look like Ziggy or when he's trying to look like Aladdin Sane, the opportunity for that to go wrong.
Yeah.
So great. You know, because so many people must have been coming to him and saying, what about wearing this, David? You know, Noddy Holder wore something like it a few weeks ago on Top of the Pops. Why don't you wear this? And somehow or other, he manages to get it right.
Which look of Bowie's do you think you would look the most bad in?
I'd look very bad in the sort of late 60s hippie, sort of like soft curls.
Yeah, that would look, be a good look.
Which actually, I think that's on the edge of looking fairly ridiculous as well.
Yeah.
In Bowie, I mean.
Yeah.
I think that's before he's quite found who he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big Yakamoto. The
Japanese designer,
The Japanese designer with the very big lined trousers with that curve. Yeah. I don't think I could have carried those off.
No.
You definitely couldn't either.
Well, I don't think I could, but I think if I was to really face my fears, I think I'd choose between either the Ziggy outfit with the shorts and the rings on the arms and stuff would be quite, you know, that he's got a Hammersmith.
But it's a good point. You know, we're talking about his sense of style and he got this right and he got that right, but it's inseparable from who he is.
Yeah.
So anyone less confident at that point in time of what they were doing, who decided to go for, you know, the gold ring on their forehead and the Ziggy thing and the long boots and whatever, anyone who got that, wore exactly the same clothes, but just couldn't carry it off in the same way, would look stupid.
like the rest of his band.
You're like everyone else in the band, yeah. Actually, like, I think Mick Ronson looks all right.
I think he looks all right, but he does look a bit like that famous thing about sort of builders wearing eyeshadow and all that.
That's a very good point about the rest of the band, because they do look ridiculous.
They look terrible.
So then the question is, did Bowie never say to Trevor Boulder, what the fuck are you thinking about with those sideburns?
Well, I suppose you could argue that, I suppose Bowie was just thinking about himself, and I don't suppose he looked around.
That's not what happens in Stardust.
That's true.
Which obviously is the Bible for these things. In Stardust, the only bit the spiders get is David saying, I want you to wear this, and them saying, what are you talking about? That's my Hull accent. We'll look like bloody Nancy boys in that gear, all that obvious stuff. But the suggestion is that David and Angie created their style together.
Yeah. But I think, let's say there's a very big gap between, and maybe the biggest of all in a group, between Bowie and the rest of his band in terms of look and everything we've been talking about. I always think there is another band, it's not quite about looks, where there's a huge, maybe bigger discrepancy between the lead singer and the rest of the band. And I always think about the fact that you would never, I don't know, maybe you would never bump into a member of the band Texas that you recognized or noted.
We've discussed this.
Have we? Without, yeah. And Charlene, you would know, and that seems
we've
to
discussed
me.
This. But can I just spin it a slightly different way?
Right.
Which is that most bands, by the way, I read a whole thing recently saying bands don't really exist anymore, which is true. And it had this one brilliant point in it. It's by Dorian Lynskey in The Guardian, which said one of the reasons that bands don't exist anymore is everyone watches stuff and even makes stuff on their iPhones, and it's a portrait format. So it's designed for a single artist. It's not designed for bands. It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
But given the sort of bands that we like, there's not many bands. The Beatles obviously don't have a straightforward frontman, so it's quite hard to discuss with the Beatles. But there's not many bands where the frontman isn't miles ahead in terms of being cool. Like the Doors are a good example, right? Or Jimi Hendrix Experience, the Doors. There's an incredibly beautiful man at the front of that, and he's also really cool. And the rest of the band are miles behind. In the Rolling Stones, arguably Keith Richards is just as cool, if not cooler, than Mick Jagger. But that's unusual. Normally, it's a front man, and then there's a massive falling off of cool with the rest of the band.
But don't you think that if you were at a party in 1969 and you bumped into one of the Doors, you might recognise one of them, Ray Manzarek or whatever his name is, but you might...
Ray Manzarek.
Right, but I think you'd at least think you look a bit like a pop star, whereas with Texas and Coldplay...
You're obsessed with Texas and Coldplay, yeah.
You'd sort of say, do you know which way the toilets are? I mean, you'd sort of just wouldn't... They would just look like... They wouldn't look like they were in a band.
No, that's true.
I mean, there are probably other examples.
No, but you have talked about this before. I'm trying to get you off that. Yeah, you've talked about how Texas are a good example of a band that you only recognise the lead singer and everyone else doesn't look like a pop star at all. We have discussed that.
Okay.
What I'm trying to talk about is whether there are other examples, apart from the Rolling Stones, of a band where there's a member of the band rather than the frontman who's sort of AC/DC.
Yes, that's a good one.
Possibly Guns N' Roses.
Madness?
No. Madness, do you think?
I'm just trying to think. They seem...
Who are you talking about apart from Suggs? Smash. Chaz Smash. The Happy Mondays. Because Bess
Happy
is
Monday.
Like...
Stone Roses?
Well, no, I wouldn't say... I mean, John Squires is a good guitarist, but I would say you know them because of Ian Brown. You know,
right.
You have a sense of them. Blur, possibly. Yeah.
Oasis.
And Oasis, yeah. See, well, Oasis are a very particular example, right? Oasis are unusual because, although I think he's actually a brilliant frontman in a way, he's a brilliant singer, Liam, because Noel so decided, this is my band and I'm going to make that clear and I write all the songs, there's this weird status relationship with them whereby he feels secondary, Liam, even though he's obviously the frontman. That is really unusual, I think.
But I know you want to get off Texas, I get that, but if... You're in a band like Texas.
Yeah.
Do you think you really, really want to be in that band? And you've had to do everything that you have to do to get into bands and sort of, you know, and be incredibly ambitious. Or do you think they feel as sort of slightly neutral about it as we feel about them?
You mean, are they bothered and resentful of Charlene Spitari?
Not even that. Are they, well, a bit that, but do they feel it? Or are they just like, yeah, well, it just sort of happened, you know, like, because you'd think they'd look a bit more pop star-y.
I don't know. I mean, I think the point about Texas is they could be called Charlene Spitari and her backing band. I mean, I don't know who writes the songs. Maybe there's someone in the band who writes the songs, but they could be. And I'm, you know, I think that's the deal, isn't it?
Can you even get the first name, the given name of one of the members of Texas?
So sure we've done something like this.
I don't think we have.
Well, I think what you did was you wanted me to name a band that was a band in which you only knew the lead singer and didn't know anyone. And
oh, that's good.
And you did it. We've done it. And, you know, shall we rename this podcast the Guess Things About Texas podcast? Well, no, I can't name anyone in Texas.
I mean, I've got all the names here. That's amazing.
Okay. Richard.
Nope.
John.
Nope. Oh, yeah. Steve. Johnny.
There is a John. Okay.
Johnny McElone.
Yeah, I mean, they're Scottish. I know they're Scottish.
Texas have sold a lot of records.
Yeah.
And I promise you.
Steve. Okay.
What?
I'm naming the first name of the band like you told me to.
No. All right. Yeah. I'm going to give you three names. One of them's in Texas.
Right. Okay.
Okay, ready?
You have to think of some random names now.
I know. I don't let you repeat it because it'll be obvious. Right, you ready?
Yes. What a format this could be.
Michael Hind.
Yeah.
James Payne. Yeah. Michael Bannister.
Michael Bannister is in Texas.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, it was really obvious you were making up the other two.
Yeah, no, that's bad. That is bad.
Just the way your face was. It was really obvious. You were trying really hard not to look like you were making up the other two.
That was bad. So
we're going to do it again?
Yeah, I'm tempted to do it again.
You know that people listen to this podcast. I mean, some people.
Right. I'm going to give you two names. One of them's in Texas. One of them isn't.
Okay. Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Neil,
go.
Neil McFarlane, Eddie Campbell. Oh no! Yeah, those two.
Eddie Campbell is in Texas.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Correct.
Do you know what that was? I thought we've had the conversation about Texas being Scottish, so Tim has chosen a Scottish name to try and throw me off.
Right.
Can I say I've got two right so far?
Okay, the final one.
Here's why you're right, though, by the way.
Yeah.
I can remember Eddie Campbell. I already can't remember any of the other names that we did of people who weren't or weren't in Texas.
Do you think if you bumped into Charlene Spiteri and you said, I'm going to give you 3 seconds, name all the members of Texas, she would be a bit stuck.
I'm going to give you some names. Some of them are in Texas, some of them aren't. I don't know if you're going to get them, Charlene. Not including you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good game, yeah.
Yeah.
I have met Charlene Spiteri.
It's Spiteri, isn't it?
Yes, and her as well. Wow. And she was very nice. But I think if she ever hears this, she might be less nice because she might feel wounded on the part of her band members.
Well, there's a lot of podcasts out there and it wouldn't harm us to get a little bit of publicity. So maybe...
Yes, it has harmed us.
No, sorry.
In the past, it's always harmed us.
It might be good to get some publicity that doesn't harm us as well. And would a spat with Spiteri?
Yeah.
I don't think
we'll have a spat with Spiteri. I think we'll have a spat with Eddie Campbell out of Texas.
I think it would be good if a journalist rang you up and said, Eddie Campbell's really pissed off with you. And you said, who?
Yeah, you must know. Ask Charlene Spiteri. Look, I think we should stop now because I think we've probably
on a few
really, years. Really wrung this idea as dry as it could possibly be wrung. What's the one song? I only really know that one song by Texas.
What is it?
Oh, you know the one. I don't know what it's called.
I actually can't call it to mind.
Oh, you would know it if you heard it.
No, I know. They were big. I mean,
Say What You Want, isn't it?
Say What You Want, yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know any other song by them. Oh, no, I Don't Want a Lover. I know that as well. Okay, so I think we should go out.
Yeah.
On this song, and I will try and name. I mean, you could watch it as well. The other people in the video. At the moment, it's Charlene.
Yeah.
Still just Charlene. Just it's Charlene's mouth. Charlene. Still no one. No Eddie. Eddie's not in it. Still, it's just Charlene.
I don't think there's anyone else in Texas, is there?
Literally, no one else.
What about Tony McGovern? Is he there?
No. Tony, mate.
Michael Bannister.
Michael Bannister. What about some of the people who aren't in it?
Ally McLean. Ally McLean.
I actually think, I've never watched this with this thought, that they aren't in this video.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, here they are.
Okay.
The guitarist has turned up, but he's so in the background.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it goes on, but I don't know the rest of the band ever turn up.
Well, also, who would know if they had or hadn't?
Well, no, I know they have, because there are people holding instruments in the background who I assume are the band. But by the end, I think, no, it's just... I'll tell you what is particularly annoying for the band is that by the end of the video, there's five or six images of Charlene.
There's five or six images where?
On the video. The video, yeah, which is a kind of slightly late 90s video, yeah, whatever it is, she is reproduced like five or six times on screen. So if I was in the band, if I was Eddie Campbell, I would have said, look, you've got like five images of Charlene on screen. It'd probably be easier, wouldn't it, to just put us in?
Yeah, of course. But I've noticed that there's as many, almost as many past members of Texas as present members.
Well, please don't play a game where I have to name past or present members of Texas. No.
But I'm just sort of wondering if you could say to Charlene, like, I wonder if every time they said, I'm going to talk to you about Stuart Kerr, but firstly, is he joining or is he leaving?
Well, if there's a lot of members, then I think in that idea that you met her and you have to name people who are in Texas, she possibly couldn't name everyone.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Maybe all the past members have gone to join the Baron Knights.
Or you could say to her a name like Neil Payne.
Yeah.
And, oh no, but that's the same thing.
Anyway, it's been a lovely conversation, Tim Hinks. Yeah. And I think we should say goodbye now because, you know, I like to think that we stretch our listeners, we engage them, we make them think, like, can I listen to any more of this?
Yeah.
And I think we've really pushed that today. And that's maybe a good thing.
By the way, just in case they're wondering, next week,
yeah,
we'll be joined by Tony McGovern,
yeah,
and Richard Hind.
Okay. What band are they in?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because one's in the band and one's a former member.
Of what band?
The Charlene Spiteri band. What are they called? I don't
know. Can't remember what they're called. Anyway, bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.